Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And last week I got stuck too. I bought a new book, 100 Ways to Make Love. I ended up in Traction. It was a misprint. I never had any luck with girls anyway. I know I'm ugly. I went to a freak show to let me in for nothing. My wife, she don't go for me either. And when she gave birth, I asked if I should be in a room with her. She said, what for? When I got pregnant, you wanted a room with me. I tell you, since I'm a kid, women always gave me a hard time. My mother never breastfed me. She told me she liked me as a friend. I mean, are you kidding? Well, my mother had morning sickness after I was born. I tell you, when I was a kid, I got no respect at all. You kid, no respect from anybody. You kidding? The time I was lost on a beach and a cop helped me look for my parents. I said to the cop, you think we'll find him? He said, I don't know, kid, there's so many places they could hide. My old man, he didn't help either. The time I was kidnapped, they sent back a piece of my finger. He said he wanted more proof. And last...
Good morning. It is Thursday, March the 30th, and this is The True Conservative. Welcome to all the butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers out there. I'm Ron, your host, and the only true conservative in the United States today. So today, after the Serenity Prayer and the Star Spangled Banner, we'll have No Free Lunch, Inspector Morse, Velshi, Tucker Carlson, The Rape of the Mind, Emotional Manipulation, George Lakoff, and Donald Trump. All that and more when I get back. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you. And now, No Free Lunch, 250 Economic Truths by David Bahnsen.
Fundamentally, there are only two ways of coordinating the economic activities of millions. One is central direction involving the use of coercion, the technique of the army and of the modern totalitarian state. The other is voluntary cooperation of individuals, the technique of the marketplace. The possibility of coordination through voluntary cooperation rests on the elementary yet frequently denied proposition that both parties to an economic transaction benefit from it, provided the transaction is bilaterally voluntary and informed. Exchange can therefore bring about coordination without coercion. A working model of a society organized through voluntary exchange is a true private enterprise exchange economy that we have been calling competitive capitalism. Milton Friedman. Out of free exchange comes a social cooperation that prospers both parties. Out of coercion comes totalitarianism, which is to say tyranny.
And that was There's No Free Lunch by David Bahnsen. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. And now about a minute and a half of Donald Trump.
Here we go. Just as I predicted, now we're playing with the big stuff. The N-word, that is, the nuclear word, is now being used front and center all over the world. This situation was caused by us. It's what happens when you have incompetent people running your government. All I can say to you is, right now, drop down and pray. Does Joe Biden understand that the reason NATO currently exists loaded up with cash is because President Donald J. Trump insisted that delinquent nations, of which there were many, carry their own weight and pay their fair share? If not, I insisted, we will not protect them from the evil empire. We will not do it. The money came pouring in after decades of non-payment and abuse. I haven't heard Joe say, thank you, President Trump, for the great job you did. Perhaps I'm just not listening. But the fact is, when I was president, I got NATO nations to pay hundreds of billions of dollars into NATO. They were all delinquent, most of them, and it was a disaster. They had no money. The United States was paying for NATO at a level that they've never paid before. Now NATO's stuffed up with cash. Thank you very much, President Trump. Thank you very much. China, Russia, and Iran, not to mention North Korea and other countries, have placed the U.S. in a very bad and dangerous position. They are dividing up the world as we sit around and let them do it. They no longer respect the United States, but they will. Go out and vote. 2024, we have to win back the White House. Thank you very much.
And that was former President Donald Trump warning of nuclear war. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. Now, a little bit of an advertisement for this guy named Felshi on MSNBC, and then some comment.
On NBC and Peacock. There are two pillars to this job as a journalist. The first is to bear witness to what's happening. The second is to hold power to account. We've got a power gap, a wealth gap, and more than ever, a communications gap. My work is to facilitate a dialogue. All of us are better off when we're around people with different backgrounds and perspectives. And the only way we effectively speak truth to power is by truly understanding all sides of an argument.
And so that was the advertisement on Squawk Box for this Yahoo named Felshi. Now, first of all, he's talking about there's two pillars to being a journalist. This is what I didn't cover before. If we want to restore the news and newscasters and news people, we have to get rid of the word journalist. The whole reason that Democrats changed the word reporter to the word journalist is journalist gives them a wider behavioral latitude. They can do more. See, they can invent things as they go along. Journalist really means you're somebody that writes a journal. And that's not what they do. Reporters report. That's all they do. They go to the scene and they report. Journalists, you never heard of, by the way, investigative reporter. It's always an investigative journalist. And investigative journalism is where the news started going wrong. The first step was in creating for-profit news, and then after that it became investigative journalism so that they could run around slandering people at will. So, again, if we want to reclaim news, first step is in referring, the true conservative refers to these people as reporters, not as journalists. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. Now, the rape of the mind, the moment of sudden surrender.
The moment of sudden surrender. Several victims of the Nazi Inquisition have told me that the moment of surrender occurred suddenly and against their will. For days, they had faced the fury of their interrogators, and then suddenly they fell apart. All right, you can have anything you want. And then came the hours of remorse, of resolution, of a desperate wish to return to their previous position of firm resistance. They wanted to cry out, "Don't ask me anything else. I won't answer." And yet, something in them, that conforming, complying, being hidden deep in all of us, was on the move. This sudden surrender often happened after an unexpected accusation, a shock, a humiliation that particularly hurt, a punishment that burned, a surprising logic in the inquisitor's question that could not be counter-argued. I remember an experience of my own that illustrated the effect of such surprise. After my escape from a Nazi prison in occupied Holland, I was able to reach neutral Switzerland via Vichy, France. When I arrived, I was put in a jail where, at first, I was treated rather kindly. After 3 days, however, I was denied an officer's right to asylum and was told that I would be deported back to Vichy, France. To this information, my jailers sneeringly added the comment that I should be happy I was not going to be deported back to the Germans. When I left to be transported to the border, I was asked to sign a paper stating all my possessions, which had been taken from me on my imprisonment, had been returned. I refused to sign because a few things, unimportant in themselves but of great emotional value to me, were not included in the package my jailers handed me. One of the guards looked at me with contempt. The second tapped his foot impatiently and repeatedly demanded that I sign the paper. The third scolded and chattered in a French that was completely unintelligible to me. I continued firm in my refusal. Suddenly, one of the officers started to slap me around the face and beat me. Overwhelmed by surprise that they should display such fury over a bagatelle, I surrendered and signed the paper. From the Vichy prison to which I was sent, I was permitted to write a letter of protest to the Swiss government. I still carry the official apology I received. This sudden change from a mood of defiant resistance to one of submission must be explained by the unconscious action of contrasting feelings. Consciously, we tell ourselves to be strong, but from deep within us, the desire to give in and to comply begins to disturb us and to affect our behavior. In psychology, this is described as the innate ambivalence of all feelings.
And that was The Rape of the Mind, the Moment of Sudden Surrender. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. 10 minutes with Tucker Carlson on gun control.
We're having a lot of gun control debates this week. And it's possible you've heard an advocate for gun control say that in this country we have more firearms in civilian hands than we have civilian hands. And that is true, actually. The total American population is about 332 million people. And collectively, they own more than 400 million firearms. About half of all U.S. households have at least one gun at home, and many have much more than that. Plus, they have ammo, billions and billions of rounds of it. Those are all real numbers, but they are hardly an argument for gun control. They're an argument, in fact, against it. Ask yourself, what would it require to confiscate all those guns and all that ammunition and turn the United States into a disarmed nation like Turkmenistan or North Korea? Well, it would take a police state, and it would end in civil war. No sane person wants either one of those things, but thankfully we don't need them. The fact that so many Americans have a firearm within reach but never commit violence tells you that guns are not the problem. Most people in this country can be trusted with an AR-15, just as we can be trusted with cars and light aircraft and electricity and baseball bats and insecticide and chainsaws and pruning shears and countless other objects that could easily double as weapons. On some level, all of us understand this. The problem is always the person, not the tool he uses to commit a crime. If you wanted to stop murder, you would focus on the people who are committing murder, not on the hundreds of millions of their neighbors who are not. You'd really want to know what motivated killers to kill. And the first thing you would do is study what murderers have in common with one another. how they were raised and where, their educational backgrounds, their genetic makeup, drug and alcohol use, their ideological and religious views, their sexual behavior, and probably a whole lot of other factors. You would study murderers, and you would do it with an open mind, as a scientist would. You would be serious about it because it matters. In the late 19th century, researchers finally decided that infection is spread by germs. And as a result of that conclusion, surgeons are now required to wash their hands before they cut you open. Everybody agrees that this is progress. But what if we had refused to learn how infection is spread? What if we just didn't want to know? Well, appendectomies would still be fatal, and we would be a backward, ridiculous, uncaring people. It's impossible even to imagine that. And yet, on the question of violent crime, of murder, it's very easy to imagine that because it's happening. Our leaders are determined not to know why people shoot each other, and they don't want us to know either. They're adamant that we do not ask questions about motive. It seems, for example, like an awful lot of mass shooters have taken prescription psychiatric drugs in the days before they opened fire and killed others. Have you noticed that? Maybe you have noticed that. Good luck saying it in public. You'll be shouted down immediately by someone with an advanced degree. How dare you criticize Big Pharma? What are you, a conspiracy nut? No, actually you're not. You're someone who cares about cause and effect. You're a rational person. The only conspiracy here is the one designed to prevent you from figuring out why mass shootings keep happening. Consider the killings that took place on Monday in Nashville. The killer was a 28-year-old female transgenderist who shot her way into a Christian elementary school and murdered 3 9-year-olds and 3 adults. Why did she do that? In a rational country, that is the very first question we would ask.
So I wanted to interject here. He gets finally, he's talking about mass shootings first, and I was disappointed. Then he refers to the killings and the killer, and that the killer murdered some 9-year-olds. Now he's starting to get the drift on how it is that we fight this, how we fight the incessant drumbeat of gun control. We master the language. We stick with reality. And the reality is here that this person committed a crime. Okay, maybe murder, might be manslaughter, we'll never know because the individual is dead and isn't going to be put on trial. Okay, but it was homicide without a doubt. And from all outward appearances, it was illegal. So it was at the very least manslaughter and very probably murder. And good for Tucker Carlson for, a little late, but he did come around to recognizing that that's what this is. And that's the way we defeat this. Every time some lefty comes to you and wants to talk about guns and gun control, you say, you start talking about crime control. You can even phrase it in the form of a question. Gun control? Well, what about crime control? Let me ask you, ma'am, sir, whoever it is that happens to be talking to you, the person that committed the crimes in Tennessee, those were crimes, right? You recognize that was criminal activity, right? And that's the way we get on the true subject here, which is, again, crime control. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. And now, Don't Think of an Elephant by George Lakoff. More from Chapter 7.
Unions and Pensions. Workers are profit creators. Conservatives like to speak of wealthy company owners and investors as job creators, that they give people jobs, as if they just create jobs as gifts for people who are out of work. That is nonsense. The truth is that workers are profit creators, and that no one gets hired unless they contribute to the profit of owners and investors. It is a basic truth. Workers are profit creators, but who says it? How many times, if any, have you heard that truth? It is an important truth. It reframes the issue of jobs from the perspective of the contributions of those who work. As we discussed earlier, a pension is a delayed payment for work already done. This is the most fundamental truth about pensions, and it is almost never said. It is an unframed truth. When you take a job and a pension comes with it, that pension is part of your pay, part of your conditions of employment. It is common for workers to forego higher current pay if there is a significant pension, since the pension is money to live on when you can no longer work. It is part of the employment contract. The idea behind pensions is that a company can pay less in salary, take the remaining money and invest it, assuming it can invest it at a higher return than the worker could, then make a profit on the investment return when the pension is later paid. An additional idea behind pensions is that they keep employees loyal to the employer, and so employers save money on having to train new workers. And, in addition, they can retain workers who know the business and so can be more efficient than new workers. In short, a pension is anything but a gift to an employee. It is earned, and it is set up to profit the employer as well as the employee. Unfortunately, money for pensions is often misappropriated or mishandled by the institutions. It may be badly invested or used for some other purpose, like paying dividends to stockholders or salaries to management. So when a company, say General Motors or a city or state, says to its employees that it cannot afford to pay pensions, they are engaging in theft, and the thieves should be prosecuted. The money has been earned. If it has been used for some other purpose, it has been stolen. If it has been badly invested, then the investment loss is the company's, and the pensioners should have a claim on the company's assets. Unfortunately, framing enters in here. Pensions and health care are called benefits, as if they are generous gifts to employees. They are not gifts. They are earned as deferred payments for work done. When a company tells its employees that they can no longer afford such generous benefits and will have to cut them, it is a framing lie. Either there has been theft or misinvestment or mismanagement. Benefits are earnings, period. Pensions and benefits are freedom issues. In a free society, there is a justice system that punishes thefts, adjudicates contracts, and, in the case of misappropriation of funds, permits lawsuits to make a claim on assets to make up for losses and the costs of the lawsuit, emotional and monetary. To the extent that there is no justice system, people with pensions and benefits that have been taken from them are not free. Large companies and some small ones have two kinds of employees, the assets and the resources. The assets include major management and especially creative or skilled people whose special creativity and skills are necessary to the company's success. They are part of the stock value of the company. They are hired by headhunters and command high salaries and golden parachutes, high pensions and compensation packages. The resources are interchangeable workers that can be hired from an employment pool. They are hired and managed by the Human Resources Department. Just as resources like gas or oil or steel are purchased as cheaply as possible, so too are human resources purchased as cheaply as possible. Since pay scales often match skill level, they tend to be hired at the lowest possible skill level and at the lowest cost. When unemployment is high and the employment pool is large, companies can offer less in salary and benefits and still get appropriate human resources while maximizing profits and payments to assets. Unionization is a freedom issue. Companies that are hiring human resources in general have much more power than individuals seeking such a job. When the company is large and there is a big human resource pool, workers seeking jobs have to take what is offered, or the job will go to the next person in the pool. This includes not just salary and benefits, but also working conditions, job safety, working hours, overtime, and so on. The employee is serving on the company's terms and often at the company's whims. In capitalistic economic theory, employment is a transaction in which the employer buys the labor of the employees and the employees sell their labor to the employer, hence the term labor market. It is assumed in economic transactions that both will seek the best deal.
And that was more of Chapter 7 of Don't Think of an Elephant by George Lakoff, Ph.D. So I the only thing I wanted to mention on this one was, again, he's framing an argument. He puts everything, and the nice thing about this book is that he's upfront about it. He's bold and comes right out and lets you know that he's framing the argument. So when he says that a pension is part of earnings, that's just a way to frame the argument. And so from his standpoint, there isn't truth or falsity. There's just different ways of expressing reality. So there's the left way and the conservative way. So, and sometimes the left is going to be more effective at framing an argument than the conservatives are. But the point is, where he is right is if you're unsuccessful in terms of properly framing, because from our standpoint as conservatives, we want to frame the argument from a truth standpoint. For instance, let's take a look at homelessness. True homeless people are people that have no house because of natural disasters, such as earthquakes, fires, floods, and the like. Those are homeless people. The people that are chronically living on the street are not homeless. They're bums. They're trespassers. They're squatters. Now, the left wants to frame these people as being either homeless or as unhoused or experiencing homelessness. Okay? It is important for conservatives to speak the truth and frame the argument truthfully. So that means that we must describe these people the way they are. They are squatters. They should not be referred to by any true conservative as homeless, because they're not. They're squatters and they're trespassers. And the first issue is property rights. Getting these folks off of other people's property, that's step number one. After that, if you want to come up with some kind of subsidized housing for these individuals or drug treatment or whatever, okay. But the first step is to respect property and property rights. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. And now, Chapter 4 from the book 30 Covert Emotional Manipulation Tactics by Adeline Birch.
4. I refuse to have this discussion. All about invalidation. When we invalidate people or deny their perceptions and personal experiences, we make mental invalids of them. When one's feelings are denied, a person can be made to feel crazy, even when they are perfectly mentally healthy. R.D. Lang, M.D., psychiatrist. An especially damaging form of emotional abuse, invalidation is the act of rejecting, diminishing, ignoring, judging, or making fun of someone's feelings. Unfortunately, it happens all too often, and there even seems to be an epidemic of it in society. Invalidation is insidious and often pervasive in certain relationships. When we've had our feelings invalidated, we know that something doesn't feel right, but we can't put our finger on exactly what it is. One reason it remains hidden is that many of us have learned to think invalidation is normal, because it's so common. You may even do it to others. It might be common, but it's not healthy. Think of how often you've heard people say things like, "It could be worse." Lighten up. Don't let it get to you. Just forget about it. Or, "You can choose to be happy." People invalidate others for a variety of reasons. Sometimes purposefully and sometimes not. An abuser will use invalidation as a tool of manipulation and a weapon. Others may be short on empathy. Some may feel uncomfortable with your emotions or feel powerless to do anything to help you. Some are envious of you and will invalidate your achievements and the things that bring you happiness. "It's not such a big deal," or, "He's not really that great. You could do better." The bottom line is this. When you're invalidated, you are not having your emotional needs met because the person doing the invalidating is not behaving with empathy. One doesn't have to operate with great malice to do great harm. The absence of empathy and understanding are sufficient. Charles M. Blow. Empathy is understanding and identifying with another's feelings or difficulties, and then conveying that understanding to them. It creates a sense of caring and mutual understanding. In other words, empathy connects people emotionally. When you tell someone close to you that you're feeling blue about something and they say, "It really isn't that bad. A lot of people have it worse, you know." Do you feel cared for, understood, and supported? Of course not. Because your feelings and concerns have been invalidated. The other person has conveyed that they don't think your feelings are valid, so therefore they will not offer any support. As a result, you will not have your emotional needs met. We all have innate emotional needs. If these needs aren't met, there can be serious consequences to our psychological health. Invalidation is no trivial matter. According to Steve Hine, MSW, author of the excellent and invaluable website, EQI.org, invalidation is psychological murder or soul murder. Having emotional needs does not mean you are needy. It means you are normal. Our fundamental emotional needs. To be acknowledged. To be accepted. To be listened to. To be understood. To be loved. To be appreciated. To be respected. To be valued. To feel worthy, to be trusted, to feel capable and competent, to feel clear, not confused, to be supported, to be physically and emotionally safe. You can determine the health of your current relationships by determining whether or not your emotional needs are being met. Invalidation needs to be recognized and taken seriously, because it can lead to mental health problems. Researcher Thomas R. Lynch, Ph.D., found that a history of emotional invalidation was significantly associated with emotion inhibition. In example, ambivalence over emotional expression, thought suppression, and avoidant stress responses. Further, emotion inhibition significantly predicted psychological distress, including depression and anxiety symptoms. When we experience invalidation, we defend ourselves either through withdrawal or counterattack. Repeated withdrawal, though, tends to decrease our self-confidence and lead to a sense of powerlessness and depression. On the other hand, going on the offensive often escalates the conflict. A healthier response, one which is both informative and assertive, without being aggressive, is to simply express your feelings clearly and concisely. For example, you might respond, "I feel invalidated," "I feel mocked," or "I feel judged," says Hine. How someone responds to those statements is important. Do they invalidate you again when you say you feel invalidated, or do they want to learn more? The following are examples of invalidating statements. They either minimize your feelings, deny your perceptions, order you to feel differently, tell you how you should feel, or put you on a guilt trip for thinking or feeling the way you do. I thought we already talked about that. I can't believe you're going to bring that up again. I refuse to have this discussion. You should be ashamed of yourself for feeling that way. You need to realize how lucky you are. It could be worse. You shouldn't feel that way. Think about those who have it worse. Just don't worry about it. Get over it. Stop taking everything so personally. Get a life. Lighten up. Cheer up. Don't look so serious. You've got it all wrong. Of course I respect you. But I do listen to you. That is ridiculous. This is nonsense. That's not the way things are. I honestly don't judge you as much as you think I do. You are the only one who feels that way. It doesn't bother anyone else. Why should it bother you? You must be kidding. It can't be that bad. You're just tired. It's nothing to get upset over. It's not worth getting that upset over. You should feel thankful that blank. You should be glad that blank. Just drop it. You should just forget about it. I'm sure she didn't mean that. Maybe he was just having a bad day. You shouldn't let it bother you. I'm sure she means well. Don't make that face. You don't really mean that. Do you think the world was created to serve you? Don't you ever think of anyone but yourself? What about my feelings? Time heals all wounds. Every cloud has a silver lining. Life is full of ups and downs. You can't choose to be happy. You're just going through a phase. Everything has its reasons. Everything is just the way it is supposed to be. This is really getting old. This is getting to be pathetic. I am sick and tired of hearing it. You should be over that by now. It's not such a big deal. That's what you're so excited about? Is that all? You think too much. Don't let it get to you. That's nothing to be afraid of. Stop feeling so sorry for yourself. You've been upset about this for too long. It's time to move on. Just don't think about it. You need to get past that. You need to get on with your life. You're blank, jealous, insecure, crazy, unstable, a worrywart, overly dramatic, a complainer, too sensitive. You're making a big deal out of nothing. You're imagining things. Invalidation can also be conveyed without words. Nonverbal invalidation includes such actions as leaving the room, giving the silent treatment, and rolling the eyes. With increased awareness, you'll begin to notice invalidating comments and behaviors. Invalidation makes us wonder if there is something wrong with us for feeling the way we do. According to Hine, it seems fair to say that with enough invalidation, one person can figuratively, if not literally, drive another person crazy. This is especially possible when one person has long-term power or influence over another. How someone responds to your emotions and perceptions will indicate how much they respect you, how much they care about you and your feelings, how capable they are of empathy and intimacy, and how much they are trying to change or control you.
And that was chapter 4 of the 30 Covert Emotional Manipulation Tactics, and by Adeline Birch. Back in a minute. Thank you. So this is going to be a clip from Inspector Morse, another British detective show. Inspector Morse was the original, and Inspector Lewis was a spinoff from Inspector Morse. Inspector Morse is the main character in this one, and his second in command is a sergeant, Detective Sergeant Lewis. So now Lewis later on gets promoted, and then, of course, he gets his own show. But anyhow, with Morse, what's happened here is this is an example, number one, of malevolent universe premise that's prevalent in all television programs today. And it's also a demonstration of skepticism. So in this particular episode called Seraphim and Cherubim, a young girl has committed suicide. She's has a family around her. Nobody can make sense of it. She had a bright future, et cetera, et cetera. So Inspector Morse, who is actually on leave and is investigating this on his own because he was close to the family and knew the girl personally, anyway, he's going to a suicide crisis place to get more information.
Afraid we never give information about individual callers.
Oh, no.
People wouldn't trust us.
No, I suppose so.
Sit.
It's just that she gave no sign of anything at home, you see.
Well, you do have to recognize the signs for what they are, of course.
Isn't it, for most people anyway, isn't it more a gesture?
Well, depends. Tea?
Please.
If you take a few aspirin and leave farewell messages with all your friends, you may not have a very serious intention to do away with yourself. But no note. 100 pills.
I suppose if it had just been a gesture, she'd have wanted to be there to see its success. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense.
Smashers.
Suicide very rarely does, Mr. Morse. That's why we are here. Would you like to talk it through with someone?
You said rarely, so it can make sense.
Was she religious at all?
No.
Belief in an afterlife does stop some people. It stopped me when I was very low. Oh, yes, some of us have been there, Mr. Morse. In my case, I thought I might be punished if I arrived wherever it was before I was invited. But if I thought life on Earth was all there was, well, it can be hell on Earth sometimes, can't it?
Why should she think that? She had a wonderful life. Marvelous future.
No one ever knows what goes on inside someone else's head. And someone once told me the average teenager in any 24-hour period shows symptoms of every known psychiatric illness.
Are there many cases like this, then? Absolutely without explanation.
You've seen this? Very similar. A girl, Leighton Buzzard. Again, no note. There always is an explanation. niente.
So that was an example, again, where he goes looking for answers. He's looking for certainty of knowledge. Somebody with some expertise, if not clinically or academically, then certainly in terms of experience. And so he's speaking to this woman who apparently has some experience, but he doesn't get any answers. He gets no answers from her whatsoever. She speaks in ways that make you think that she's wise, but she doesn't give him any answers. He's trying to find out why it is this girl would do it. And this woman basically tells him that there's no way to know. And this is straight out of skepticism. Skepticism says nothing can be known with certainty. Now, why would somebody want to believe a contradiction like that? Simple, because the payoff is, if nothing can be known with certainty, then anything is possible. Back in a minute.
Waves of grain for purpose.
This is Ron, your host, the only true conservative in the United States today, bidding adios to all the butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers out there. So I'm reminding you that the left has no authority, no power, and they can't win.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.